There is only me left. I am the only man alive who lived with C.S. Lewis. Got to know him very, very closely. He raised me from the age of about 8 to the age of 18. For 10 years, he spent a lot of his energies, and therefore, I should be doing the very best I can to look after his books and his writings and make sure they stay in the public eye.
Welcome to Talking Beasts
from NarniaWeb.com,
where we explore the world of C.S. Lewis
and keep a watchful eye
on the latest Narnia movie news.
This is Talking Beasts.
Hello, this is Brian Carnell, also known as Glumpuddle. What you're about to hear is my conversation with Douglas Gresham and Robert Kassar. Now, if you've been on NarniaWeb.com for a while, you may think you know a lot about Doug Gresham at this point, the stepson of C.S. Lewis, or Jack, as he preferred to be called. But there are decades of his life that I think very few NarniaWebbers know much about. Robert Kassar is in the middle of filming a documentary about Doug's life, currently titled An Honest Life. At the time of this recording, a release date has not been set. The two close friends joined me via Skype from Doug's home in Malta to discuss the project shortly before hopping on a flight to Australia to continue filming. Doug, welcome back. It's great to see you on the show again.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Yeah, and happy belated birthday.
Thanks for that. I almost forgot.
And also joining us is Robert Kassar. Robert, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Well, to start off, I thought kind of in keeping with what I understand is kind of the theme of An Honest Life, Doug, I know that you don't like mythologizing people and putting them on pedestals, and C.S. Lewis, or Jack as he was known to his friends, was just a human being after all. So, Doug, is there something you could tell us about the real Jack that you knew that might surprise readers that are kind of in awe of him?
I think to start with, the fact that he was incredibly untidy in his dress. I mean, he really did look like a retired farmer rather than a high-level academic. I mean, his jackets had the elbows torn out of them, and very often he wore slippers, which he didn't bother to put his feet into. He just trod on them and sort of shoved the feet down the front. He was just a scruffy individual to look at. But his huge personality, of course, completely overcame that. There are many things about Jack that people probably don't really know. One is that he never forgot anything he read. If he'd read a book, he could recite the book thereafter. And sometimes his students, new students particularly, would challenge him on that and say, is this true? And he would say to them, well, go and pick a book from my shelves, any book you want. And of course, the student would always choose the dustiest looking one that looked most neglected, bring it back. And Jack would say, open it at any page you like and read the first line. And the student would do so. And Jack would proceed to recite the book from where he left off. And, of course, that sort of shut them up pretty tightly. But he just did have this completely eidetic memory, which is, for a writer and also a teacher, is a very, very useful thing to have. Oddly enough, my mother had the same thing, too. She could sit down and pick up the score of a Mozart concerto, for example, read the book, and then go and play it on the piano. She and wow. Jack both shared this kind of incredible ability.
Okay. Well, Robert, I was thinking maybe you could do the same thing about Doug. You two have been friends for several years. Doug is a bit of a hero among, I'm sure he doesn't like to hear that, but Doug is a bit of a hero among NarniaWebbers. But Robert, what is something you could tell us about the real Doug that might surprise our listeners? I'm not sure how honest you're going to be with Doug sitting right there, but what's something you might want to, you could tell us?
I'm trying to choose the right words.
Go on, go for it. I'm not alarmed at the moment.
Yeah, all right. Good to keep in mind. I think the best way to describe Doug is his enormous generosity. I mean, I've never met anyone who thinks Doug is less than that. For example, he would help someone financially, emotionally sometimes. And, you know, it is not something that Doug likes to brag, but I would like to highlight maybe at this point in his life.
Well, thanks, Robert. But for me, this is all just part of being a Christian.
Which brings us to this upcoming documentary, An Honest Life. Robert, what was it that made you want to tell this story?
There are several narratives in that story. First of all, I understood that Doug's life did not end when, you know, is the father or real father and mother died in back in the 60s, if I correct. Well,
that's when it started, really.
And most people seem to say, oh, you know, that this guy was just born with a silver spoon, when in reality it was not that. In reality, this guy had to pass through a lot of ordeals in order to get to a point where he is, you know, himself. And I wanted to capture that. There is no dramatic license in this documentary, so I wanted to say it as honestly as possible. And when Winnie and Doug started conversing about it, he said, I'll say yes on one condition. That has to be told honestly. So, and the working title stuck, in a way.
So far, anyway.
So far. Again, it's an endless discussion whether it's the name, but the subtitle will always be that. We have to tell the story as honestly as possible. Also, the documentary will not treat Doug's life through talking heads, I like to call them, where people describe him. But I'm going to use as much as Doug as much as possible. He's going to narrate it. He's going to appear on screen as much as possible. Why? Because who anyone else can tell his story but not himself?
And I'm good at it.
I think you're getting better at it.
I'm getting better at it.
With proper direction.
He's training me carefully. I think it is important, though, to say that the term an honest life in this case does not necessarily mean that I've always led an honest life. It took me many years to realize that I was making a mess of my life, and to realize the only thing I could really do to help was turn it over to Christ. And since I've done that, of course, my life has been a very different kettle of fish. But we're not going to hide any of these things. We're not going to sort of tell stories about other people, but we're certainly going to tell the truth about myself, because I think that's important.
In reality, when you try to, I would say, distill your story to fit the third act narrative, that means he was happy, then he became unhappy, and then he's happy again. That's not life. That could be a Cinderella kind of story, but it's not our story. And if you read his first biography, I'm calling it the first, because it was your first attempt at understanding your life, retrospectively. And now his second attempt, if I want to call it a second attempt, is through this document, is more fresh, is more real, more honest in a way. It might sound like a cliche, but who anyone else can judge himself than not himself? And it is strange that most people seem to think that, you know, Doug's life story is simple, you know?
I wish it had been.
I mean, it's not. This guy lived across three different continents. He lived a multitude of lives. I mean, I'm to count your careers here. So you were a farmer.
Yes.
A broadcaster.
Yes.
A private investigator, right?
Yes, private investigator.
I think you were...
Armed security agent.
Armed security agent. I don't know what that means. We'll leave it to the documentary. firefighter coordinator.
Firefighter, yes.
I mean, the list is endless.
State emergency services coordinator.
As you can see, we're going to have an extended cut. So.
Yeah, I've led a pretty complicated life. I've always enjoyed adventures. And being a fire officer is an adventure of its own. And it also usually winds up helping people, which is something else. I've always loved helping people. It's just something that I was born with, I guess. And becoming a state emergency services coordinator, same thing applies. And all the other things I've done, they've been done mainly because, to start with, I desperately needed money for most of my early life and found a variety of different legal ways of obtaining it rather than turning to the illegal ways. I've been a broadcaster on radio and television before, and I've done all sorts of weird things. But to me, this has just been the way my life is. You know, it's not something strange. I mean, other people find it weird and wonderful and amazing, but it's just the way things panned out for me. And I'm very grateful that's the way it happened.
Yeah, you've done so many different kinds of things I think Narnia Webbers are just not aware of. I think a lot of Narnia Webbers we know about, of course, you've heard a lot of stories about your time with Jack and now times in recent years with, you know, working on the Narnia films and being kind of a guardian of those. But kind of those in-between years, I think, is not very generally known. Lenten Lands, of course, is your autobiography published in the 70s. How does the story of Lenten Lands compare to the story of this new documentary? What do you kind of hope to achieve in this new documentary that's different from Lenten Lands?
Robert, what would you say to that?
Let's say that Lenten Lands was a book written through a lengthy interview that Doug did in the 70s.
Yes, so. Indeed. With
and I watched it when we were at the Wade Center.
At the Wade Center, yes.
I watched it since the entirety. It's quite a long interview. But it's like someone asks you, how do you feel? And you la, 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 and you say how you feel. Mm-hmm. This documentary is not like that. This documentary is basically going to the places that these things happen. For example, in a few weeks, we're going to Tasmania. And that's where, how many years did you live there? At least two decades.
Lots. I can't remember exactly. Lots. There. Probably about 20 years.
So he's not like, for example, in the interview or even in the book, it's sketched in a way that he was, a farmhand. But that's it. So he doesn't talk about how that made him feel, how that made him feel starting from scratch, how that made him feel,
I can tell you about what farming made me feel. I loved every minute of it.
For example.
I enjoy it and still enjoy it.
Another area, for example, that this documentary already captured is the feelings of grief that Doug had to pass through when he lost his parents. In the book, it was, how can I say, described. I think in our documentary, it is narrated. It is told, it is expressed. There were scenes where, thank God the camera was on. I was like, I hope the camera's on, because we're capturing moments.
There are other times when we both wish the camera was off, too, mind
you. And there are times where, and then we looked to each other and we said whether it should make it to the cut or not. In reality, it's the narrative which drives the documentary. So right. Some people tell me, do you plan ahead? We do a lot of planning, and Doug will know that I plan meticulously. In fact, his nickname for me is...
Meticulous.
Meticulous. and he will do
well-known Roman legionary, meticulous.
And, he's like, he told me, I think we got it in the can. I said, let's do one more. And the third one, the fourth take, he will say something that was not told in the first three takes. And it's usually the one which is more honest in a way. It's the one which is really...
More stuff comes out.
Without being PC.
He's a very good inquisitor.
I should get another job like...
No, he should just buy a steak and a box of matches.
So that's the best way to say that the book captures something, but it's like taking a sample of a cake. In reality, the movie will be the cake.
And of course, the book ends, I think, Doug, you're in about your late 20s when the book ends. And so this kind of a continuation of that?
Yeah, I guess the book ends with Warnie's funeral.
For listeners that don't know, Warnie was C.S. Lewis's older brother.
And I would have been late 20s possibly at that time. And I think probably we are going to look back at that sort of thing as well, but we are moving ahead now much further. I mean, that's 30 years ago or something, more than that. So there's a lot to fill in the meantime.
Yeah.
And an awful lot of adventures have happened since then.
Doug, you alluded to all the different hats you've worn over the years. How exactly did you come to, I think everyone just assumes you've just kind of always worked for the C.S. Lewis Company, but of course that's not true. How did you eventually come to work for the C.S. Lewis Company?
Well, I mean, it's kind of interesting in some ways and kind of boring in another, because basically I'm the only man who can do the job. I am the last dinosaur of a dying race. There is only me left. I am the only man alive who lived with C.S. Lewis, got to know him very, very closely. And I was at his funeral, and I was at Warnie's funeral, and so on. I mean, I think probably there aren't too many men alive, there aren't any men alive, who share those characteristics. But I suppose I got entangled with the C.S. Lewis Company, which was founded shortly after Warnie died, because I felt it was a debt I owed to Jack. I mean, He raised me from the age of about 8 to the age of 18. For 10 years, he spent a lot of his energies trying to teach me to be a good human being and trying to teach me the things he felt I ought to know, a lot of which he was completely right about, though I rejected some of the stuff at the time. And so he put a lot of effort into me, and I realized, and I feel very strongly, that I owe him a debt of gratitude, and therefore I should be doing the very best I can to look after his books and his writings and make sure they stay in the public view, public eye. I think it's important that Jack's works are so important that it's very valuable that they still stay in print all the time. And so we work hard to make that happen. So I guess it was just the fact, I guess the people, other people in the company realized that I really knew Jack better than anyone else alive, and still do, and that I knew the works probably better than most people as well. And so that's really, I just regard it as a duty, I suppose.
If I can add something to that, sometimes... I don't know, maybe let me give you a short story from the documentary. There is a part where Doug mentions a grief observed. Mm-hmm. And you're actually one of the first ones to have actually, seen the manuscript develop in front of you.
I was probably the first person who saw it.
And for listeners that don't know, A Grief Observed is Lewis, sort of a journal that he kept, just his experience processing the grief after the death of his wife, Joy, Doug's mother.
It made me cry the first time I illegally read it. I mean, I knew what drawer he kept it in his desk upstairs. And I started glancing through it, and it made me cry then. And it makes me cry now.
That's not something that can be replicated. Not something that, for example, sometimes people will ask Doug through an email or something, so what would C.S. Lewis say? I don't know, but I was there when he wrote it, and that's, and that's it. And he will, you know, end the story, at least tell it as honestly as possible.
There are also at the moment, there seems to be a fad for creating or inventing or attributing quotes to C.S. Lewis that he never said.
That's still a problem, absolutely.
Yeah, it is a problem. And a lot of people will write to me and say, is this real? And I say, well, it may be real, but C.S. Lewis didn't say it, you know? There are a lot of those things hanging around. In fact, someone even wrote a book called Misquotes by C.S. Lewis or something
like
that.
William O'Flaherty, yes.
That's right. Yeah, William O'Flaherty wrote that. And that's it's a pretty useful tome for me to check every now and again to make sure I'm sure I'm right about something. But I've seen so many things that Jack is supposed to have said which just don't gel with Jack's personality, his way of speaking, or anything at all about him. So I can usually pick up the fake ones pretty quickly.
Yeah, and with the explosion of social media, of course, it's become even more of a problem, the phony C.S. Lewis quotes I see. And yeah, I'm glad we got to give William O'Flaherty a shout-out. It's not just the book. He also has a website and a Facebook page just dedicated to setting the record straight on those quotes.
Good for him. I appreciate that wherever you are. I really do appreciate that. Thank you.
Absolutely. Robert, you kind of alluded to, apart from just telling the story of Doug's life and of C.S. Lewis, and apart from just getting that story out there, what are some of the lessons or themes that you hope people will walk away with when they see this documentary?
I think the universality of guilt, that mistakes in our life makes us feel that we are not worthy of living a good life. A good life, I mean, not a rich, prosperous life, but a good inner life. For example, there was a scene in Oxford where, Doug passed through from this world
briefly into the next. Yes, very briefly. And that's in Lent and Lands. But it's something you can't. I don't think you read it. You can really get the gist of it as well as if one talks about it and explains it. But it's very difficult to explain.
I think we did four takes on that.
Probably. And we had some difficulties at the time with people who wanted to come and shake my hand and so forth. I got mobbed in the churchyard, but it was quite fun.
But we were always being interrupted by people who are either fans of Doug and or they recognize him. And for me, many people will tell me, it's not, stopping you from achieving your film. In reality, it shows how much this movie will find an audience.
I think you're right.
I think it's telling me that,
I think it also points out that we're not the sort of people who will just push people away. Okay. We just don't do that kind of thing, And the lovely episode in the Burden Baby pub in Oxford, for example. Yeah. This guy has a mischievous sense of humor, by the way. But we went in there just so I could show him the place, and we found all the photographs of Jack and Warney and Tollers and others on the wall. And there was a young couple ardently taking photographs of these pictures on the wall. So Robert said, why are you taking photographs of those pictures? And the girl or the boy, I can't remember which, said to him, we've come all the way from Canada to take photographs of these pictures. That's C.S. Lewis. And Robert said, well, why are you taking pictures of him when you've got his stepson standing just over there? And of course, it started what turned out to be a delightful interval with this couple from Canada who'd come all the way over to take pictures of him. And then found me in the pub. Eventually, they told us that we had made their entire trip, which was just very beautiful.
And it was their honeymoon.
All right. But we could have shunned them, and we could have turned and walked away. But it's just not the right thing to do, if you know what I mean. They were delightful people.
Right. Well, Doug, we've talked a lot about the past. What do you think is next for you? What's coming up on the horizon here?
Well, being someone who's dedicated his life and everything I am and everything I have to Christ, that's a very difficult question to answer. We were farming quite happily in Tasmania, and the Lord moved us suddenly to Ireland to run a Christian psychotherapy and counseling ministry there, which lasted nearly 14 years. Then he moved us to Malta, where I am now. He plunged me into the film business and so on. So I really do whatever the Lord sends across my path. Roberts is one of the things the Lord laid across my path. Well, I haven't shot him yet, so he's doing all right. You know.
As you can see, we have a very pleasant relationship.
We're good mates. Yeah, we're good mates. Sooner or later, I suppose I'll have to stop. I'm 73 years old as of yesterday, so I ought to be slowing down. I still drive fast cars and motorcycles, though. So I'm not giving up the ghost just yet, I hope.
Our next trip is in Tasmania and Australia, mainland Australia. We're going to be at with his son, eldest son, James Place. And then we're going to spend our week in Tasmania. And we hope to capture during those 2 weeks of filming. Those, I call them the years that we've lost. That means those 20 to 30 years. Where again, Doug had to work, you know, long.
And any
long
job I could get, yeah. I mean,
yeah. And also, another thing that sometimes grieves me to hear, sometimes from, I'm going to call them Christians, they will tell me, well, of course Doug is Christian. After all, he's the stepson of C.S. Lewis.
It didn't and work like that.
It's like, you know, of course, he's like Jesus. He's like the son of God, you know. Obviously, he's a Christian.
It doesn't work that
way. It doesn't work like that. I mean, I told him, in my documentary, it will be at the 70 minutes when he becomes what you would call
Christian. Well, it was late in life. I didn't hand myself over to Christ until I was 45 years old. So I got through an awful lot of sinning before then. So I was good at it, let's face it.
All right. Well, we are certainly looking forward to seeing the final edit. Thanks so much for being on Talking Beasts.
It's been a pleasure.
It's been a pleasure.
That was Douglas Gresham and Robert Kassar talking about their upcoming documentary, currently titled An Honest Life. Once again, at the time of this recording, a release date has not been set. You've been listening to Talking Beasts, an ArnieWeb.com podcast. If you've enjoyed this episode, please consider sharing it with a friend. And be sure to subscribe and post a comment below or in the Talking Beasts Facebook group. You can also email us at podcast@narniweb.com or glumpuddle@narniweb.com. Special thanks to The Rose Tree Dryad, Fantasia Kitty, and Melton Tolley. For the latest Narnia Netflix news, visit narniweb.com. Have a happy Thanksgiving. We will be back on December 7th. Until then, further up and further in.